This interview with Aaron Bell was recorded on January 29th, 2022, during the Baltimore Youth Film Arts Workshop, Inside Stories, Perspectives on Incarceration.
We talk about what life was like for you before going to the joint, what it was like during incarceration and after incarceration. How has it changed you? What's it like, you know, leaving that type of environment and then being back in the real world? So those three things, before, during, and after. And actually, even though this is our first class, I mean, you know, this ain't like brain surgery. Our fellows are smart enough to have a curiosity and ask some questions. So we're going to let them ask you some questions. But I'm going to start off and just give them a guide. All right? Is that cool?
Sure.
Okay. Sure. So, hey, man, tell us a little bit about why you go to prison.
Okay. I went to prison because of me loving the street atmosphere, the street lifestyle, loving something that didn't love me back. Pride issues, not asking for help or assistance. Wanted to do things on my own, wanted to make my own way, wanted to have my own money. And I kind of loved the camaraderie, the family orientation of being around these individuals and the mixing emotions of hustling and dealing and the adrenaline rush. But on the flip side, my lifestyle and my upbringing is two ways. I had a well-versed upbringing, and the other side had to deal with the atmosphere which I was raised in, meaning the neighborhood and society that I was in. So that's kind of, you know, if you want me to elaborate even more, I can.
I hear what you're saying, so tell me if I'm correct. You grew up with a good family. And somewhere along the line, you were surrounded by influences that probably influenced you.
I'll start there. I was born and raised in East Baltimore. Okay. East Baltimore today around the Johns Hopkins area is not what it was in the 90s. What you see today with the condominiums and the penthouses and Johns Hopkins buying up all the real estate, it did not look like this. You had a roughly maybe 7 to 8 project houses in the circumference of Johns Hopkins. So the atmosphere was not how it is today, which you see people jogging, running with their dogs. It was totally different. I was raised in a single parent household. My mother is a very educated woman. She worked for the state government for years. My father was in and out of my life. But at the same time, she taught me a lot. So I've been to dinner parties. I've been to plays. I've been to many various things. But in the likes, a woman cannot teach a man really how to be a man. I really needed a male figure, a person to give me another option. And me living in this type of neighborhood and being around these individuals who have a different type of upbringing, you know, like I said, the camaraderie became more stronger. And I was attached to sports as well. So I met even more individuals. So the more people that I met were street guys. And seeing the limelight and seeing the action and seeing the fame and so much things moving, people get addicted to it.
How old were you?
When I got incarcerated?
No, when you started hanging around the neighborhood guys and doing what your mom ain't want you to do.
Oh, this started really roughly getting out of middle school. This is when an individual like literally begins to start smelling himself. You know, he's starting to learn a little bit about himself, what's his capabilities, you know, etc. But the other side of my life is, you know, education always played a part. You know, education always played a part. I always was an individual who had friends, who networked. People loved me. They liked me. I went to high school. I graduated from high school. You know, so much that I even got accepted to various colleges. you know, and I wanted to do the things in a correct manner, but my pride got into the way. My love for something, like I said, that didn't love me started. And this comes from hustling and selling drugs and having my own without me saying, can you buy me this? Can I have this? I want this. And I can do it on my own.
Well, what was the part, Aaron, that led you to say, you know, that you wanted to like break away from what mom then was doing? What was it? Was it money? That you could make money fast or what?
Yeah, it was that. It was that. I seen guys who were nothing and one day became everything in the next. I seen guys, man, who had no name, you know, the whole East Side knew them. You know, I loved it how it felt. I loved it, you know, like I said, the atmosphere. I loved it having my own. You know, a lot of people say that, you know, you have to be patient and wait for the things. But being a youth, you're impatient. And, you know, sometimes when you hear a person giving constructive criticism or trying to give you guidance, you know, you brush it off. You're like, what do you know? You know, can you show me something different? It's not the same like how it is today where you have social media, where, you know, you can look up something. What is an NFT? What is cryptocurrency? What is this? What is that? And they tell you everything. A lot of people back during that time did not have, you know, certain type of resources or a certain type of education on how to start a business or, you know, form an LLC or do this and do that. People didn't have those type of, you know, alternatives. So what I seen was the hustle. What I seen was drugs being sold. What I seen was, oh, this is how I get me a AMG. This is how I buy this. This is how I do that. And I've worked 9-to-5s before. I can tell you a story right now. I used to work for UPS. And when I had got accepted to various colleges and I graduated from Dunbar and I played ball, I worked at UPS and I used to get off at 2 o'clock in the morning. 2 o'clock in the morning. And I vowed to myself, I said, I'm going to push the streets to the side. I'm not going to do this. A lot of people are getting murdered. A lot of people getting locked up. I'm going to try a new way. And I did that. And they worked me so much. It was ridiculous. And I kept on striving. I didn't even have a car. I drove a mountain bike from West Baltimore to East Baltimore. So much that I did it daily, day in and day out, trying to motivate myself to do something that was positive. I caught a flat tire. I walked from Joe Avenue all the way to Johns Hopkins. I got fed up. I went to my ends meet and I said, I'm going back. And when I went back, I was back embraced by the same individuals. Sometimes when you look at it, it wasn't love. It was more of, you know, a downer. And I made so much money, as much as it flowed in my hands, as much as it flowed out. And then I wind up catching a murder and receiving this amount of time, 50 years in prison, you know, for a decision of not being patient. But at the same time, you know, being a teenager, you had to learn from life lessons, but your mind not being so developed to understand that on the flip side, everything that glitters isn't gold. You know,
so Aaron, it's time it
is. Right.
Just bouncing off what you said. I didn't mean to step on you just now.
Okay.
What happened on that particular day that gave you 50 years? What went down?
Well, it was a miscommunication. Without me diving so far into it, because I have a co-defendant who is in prison, who is, you know, in a process of giving his time back. But a miscommunication comes into play about some money. And one party thought one thing, and it wasn't. So much that an individual wind up losing his life, so detrimental that, you know, he became tortured. Gasoline doused on him. You know, so without me diving so much far into it, because somebody else has, you know, a case pending, not case pending, but, you know, appeals wise, you know, this how it happened. And, And it changed the whole dynamics of my life as well as my family.
Hey, Luke, did you want to throw anything in there as we get ready to get one of our fellows to empty their mind for Mr. Bell? I'm going to ask you to throw something in there, Luke, and then we're going to get a volunteer from all of our students. Go ahead, man.
Absolutely. Yeah, thanks so much for being on call, Mr. Bell. Appreciate it.
Sure.
Yeah, so I'm sort of curious about sort of the nature of your sentence. Did you end up doing the full 50? I mean, you look younger than that, so I assume not. But
no, I didn't do the full 50. Really, in actuality, I got sentenced to 40 years. In the process, the clerk court messed my paperwork up and added consecutive instead of concurrent. So they added consecutive and added an extra 10 on my sentence, which gave me 50. So when I went back to court with a modification in sentence has to deal with, you know, the judge giving you leniency because of the programs that you performed and, you know, your behavior and your performance inside of prison. The first time I gave back 5 years. And then the second time is after the Ravens won the Super Bowl. I gave back another 5 years. And then I also let the judge know that you didn't sentence me to this. And he knew exactly. I didn't sentence you to 50 years. I sentenced you to 40. I gave back 10. So that was 15. And then later on, eventually, I gave back another 5. So now I was left with 25 years and I wind up doing 18 and some change on that.
Anything else you want to add, Luke, before we bring one of our fellows on? I bet Mark has a question.
Yeah, I'm all good. Let's leave it to the fellows. Anybody? Any questions?
I said volunteers and then I volunteered Mark.
I have a question. Oh, you said somebody else first, then me?
Go ahead, man. You go ahead.
Okay. So first I want to say thank you again for being on here. Thank you for letting me ask this question. So I wanted to know, while you were incarcerated, was there ever a time that you were scared for your life? And if so, would you be able to describe that?
There were many times that I can say that this happened. Necessarily, it doesn't mean that in a beef sense. It doesn't necessarily mean with the knife. Mm-hmm. The first time that I got incarcerated, I can touch both walls with my hands. I can spread my hands out and touch both walls. I can get on my tippy toes and touch the ceiling. I never experienced that a day in my life. It's like living in a closet. I've seen men lose their minds. I've spent 2.5 years, 22 hours in a cell with another roommate. I've seen guys get mental illness. I feared for my life in that way, to not losing my mind and having some type of sense. People turned to medication. They couldn't sleep at night. Some people hung themselves. And I can also give you other stories of having miscommunication with various gangs, or they afflicted some type of harm on one of my Muslim brothers, and, you know, respect level, because in prison and also in the feds, respect is the utmost of importance. It teaches a person about mannerism. It teaches the person how to speak to an individual. You can say whatever you want to say, but it's how you say it and how you present it. Because at any given moment, one small thing, maybe a brush by a person, you rooted a person in the shower, something that you may deem insignificant could cost you everything. And this also affects me outside in society, where I have to also be patient with people that I come in contact with, and not knowing that, you know, respect out here is minuscule. We walk past it every day. We don't say, excuse me. Some of us, we don't even respect ourselves to wash our own hands. You understand? Yeah. So just proper hygiene, just presenting yourself is a form of respect. So not losing my integrity, my name, my respect, I feared my life for that. Because if I come out here in society, I'm going to affect my family. whether I bring in negative energy, whether I you know, lose my life or take mine or anything, or take somebody else's, where they say, "Dad, you didn't want to come out here." I fear for my life for that, the utmost, you know?
Thank you very much.
I have a question.
Go ahead, anybody else? I'm sorry. Was that you, Mark?
I was just saying thank you for answering my question.
Okay. Yeah. Who's next besides Mark? What about you, Weijing? Weijing, sorry. Anything that you are curious about that you've heard so far, or any question in general?
Yes. Well, also, like Mark said, thank you so much, Mr. Bell, for coming through and speaking with us and sharing, you know, your story and your perspective. And I'm curious, something that you said about when you before, when you picked up the UPS job, and then you spoke something about this self-motivation that you had. And so I'm curious to know, within that shift, or, you know, what was it that, you know, what was that shift in mindset for you to then, like, to start that job, you know, like, to have that 9-to-5? Were there other influences that were like, okay, you know, where you did listen to, like, guidance? You talked about, like, oh, you know, sometimes brushing it off. Was it something that, okay, I'm gonna listen to this guidance, or did it come from within? Of like, I mean, I feel either way, maybe it is something that comes from within. But yeah, I'm curious about, you know, what that shift is like for you in that sense, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I understand. Like I told you, my upbringing is both sides. So much where I've been to dinner parties, I've been to plays, you know, I've been to symphonies, I've been to many places. I was so talented in art that I went to the Institution of Art, right, on Mount Royal Avenue when I was in elementary school. So I had a taste of different things, but I had the best of both worlds. So I can't be upset. When that came about and I actually seen detrimental things happen to people outside, you know, a person getting killed or a person getting shot, or I got a total gun, your conscience is going to play on you, because you look at your family, you look at, you know, people and who and the likes love you. There's a book, right, that is called The Boy, the Mole, the Fox, and the Horse. The boy asks the mole, he says, "What is your definition of success?" He says, "It is to love." Because love is a thing that causes success in everything that you do, right? And then in the likes, they say, well, if you love something, you'd be successful at it. If a relationship, if that person loves you and then you love them, it becomes successful. Without the love in the middle, it doesn't. So I looked at that. I had to look at my mother. I had to look at my family. I said, damn, like, I got guys that's my age. They never made it to 18. They never made it to 21. They're not here. Some of these guys got double life sentences. I got a guy right now got 3 life sentences plus 100. You can't fathom that when you look at the paperwork and it says death. So now I have to give myself an opportunity. I got to give myself a chance. I did the job. I'm talking about working at night and still going to school in the morning. And it's not just for me, but I got people behind me that love me. So now, being a youth, and you not being fully experienced in life, you give up quick. You give up so quick because it's like, I'm tired, I'm fed up. I got to do this. I got to make this money. I got to make my own, because it's different being a man in society. Nobody wants a man to be begging and clinging and you know, asking, and this is out of respect, asking a woman for money or I need this, I need that. You're a grown man. Make your way. So you know, this is what played on my... Somebody says something?
No. That was me. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Aaron. I was going to chip in something that you're saying, because our time is running a little bit short. Finish out that last thought, then I'll ask you. kind of
I just lost the thought.
But that's okay.
About making your way. Oh.
Huh?
You were speaking about making your way.
Yeah, so making my way was the most important thing to me. But I think my problem was not having the patience to look at the end game. I was just looking at the steps that was in front. I was just trying to put the best foot forward. And so much that, you know, maybe I should have just stuck with it. You know, sometimes you got to go through the rough patches actually to, you know, succeed. You got to stick to the people that love you. And the people that love you going to hold your hand and say, this is what I need you to do. Not the people that just love you from a distance. So I think the love wasn't lack. I think it was just my own decision and choices that made me go there. And I learned from it. I hope that can answer your question.
Do any of those choices haunt you now? Now that you know, given your, you paid society back, do you have any regrets from before prison or during prison that you had to go through this experience?
First, I have the small regret of that of the life. And the reason why I'm saying that, in actuality, I don't, because it made me to who I am. It made me to who I am so much because without this situation, I may have been dead earlier, maybe in my 20s or maybe 19. It made me really sit down, read more books, learn about myself in general, learn about my skills, my capabilities, my form of learning. Am I more a visual learner, more of an audio learner? How do you really deal with people? What is your respect level? What is your skill level? Because now that I'm out here in society now, people look at me and they say, you're a totally different person. Like your vision, the level in which you are vibing on, your energy is different. Everything is flowing, you know, together. It's moving step by step. A lot of the education that I received in prison, not saying that you want to go to prison. Nobody wants to go to prison. You couldn't even pay the amount of money in the world to receive the experience that I received. Nobody can literally fathom that at all. So, Aaron, yeah.
I'm sorry. I know I keep jumping in, but I'm trying to give everybody a chance to ask you a question.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
We can be here for 3-4 hours, man, talking about your experience. So don't feel like you've done anything wrong. You know, it's not like you're not saying enough, or it's not like you're talking too much. Man, we appreciate appreciate all of this. Is there another fellow that would like to ask Mr. Aaron a question? Because so far, he has covered before prison. Mr. Aaron has covered during prison with great answers. He just got through talking about after prison. So is there anybody that want to kind of like put everything in synopsis, and we'll interview him for about maybe 5 more minutes? Any of you fellows? Any of you?
I didn't have a question about like the whole synopsis, but I did have a question about something you mentioned before about how some of the people in prison were developing mental illness. And I just wanted to ask, like, how is your mental health affected by your experience in prison?
Great question.
Yeah, that's a great question. My mental health got strengthened from my faith. You know, I am Muslim. So me directing my attentions towards, you know, my purpose in life, and also understanding those teachings and the guidance in a way that what's around me, you know, shouldn't affect me and what I should do daily. A lot of people don't have, you know, their spirituality intact. You know, a lot of people, you know, they break down and they see the things around them as something that is real, when really in actuality is, I don't want to say superficial, but it's not real. It's like they have us in a mundane situation doing the same thing day in and day out. It's like you have to put the best foot forward to increase your knowledge, increase your skill, because if not, the person loses it. He started seeing things he's not supposed to see. He started talking to himself at another level. He started taking the medications. You know, his communication with people is off. And then one day he just flips and never becomes himself again. So I think the spirituality aspect helped me a lot. Because you're talking about nearly 20 years, day to day.
Right. Well, thank you so much.
Anybody else? Man. Don't be shy. Come on. Who haven't we heard from? Let's see. Amber's on the road. It's hard for her to talk. That might be everybody, Luke.
Yeah, it seems like it. So does anybody have any questions sort of coming from, you know, if you spoke before, no worries, sort of coming from what we've described so far? Really, really good point there, Ed. We're kind of bringing back an earlier point. What are we missing? What haven't we talked about yet?
Did y'all cover how was his life like now outside of, you know, the prison life?
Philosophically, he spoke about how life is good for his soul right now, but I think you're talking about what is he doing?
Yes.
Okay, so what are you doing specifically, Aaron, like, with your life these days?
Well, remember, I just got released December the 9th. From right now to today... Man.
This is all brand new for you. You fresh. Congratulations, yeah. Man. Congratulations.
Yeah, I appreciate it. But right now, I have accomplished so much. I'm going for my driver's test this Friday, my skills test. I passed the written test. Right now, I'm in a process of doing orientation for McCormick Spice Company. So everything is working in sync. I'm starting, you know, my bank account. I'm reintegrating into society, and it's moving very well because of the likes of networking, people that was in my life before that went to school with me, they're by my side. And as I said to the young lady earlier, you know, about that quote, it's the people that love you. And the people that's there when you are in prison, you find out what love truly is. You know, when everything, all the glitter is gone and everybody is gone, you're going to find out who's still there. You know, so everything is working. We talking about only been out here, what, a month and a half now. And it's moving at a fast pace. Only thing that I have concern is this ankle monitor and this phone that they give me that keeps on ringing all the time. Other than that, life's good.
Well, that's only going to be temporary. That's going to soon be over, man. You're going to be really free. You're going to really be free. We really thank you a lot. You know what? I'm kind of really happy about this, Luke, because in about 30 minutes time, we got everything covered like we wanted to do. We had a whole bunch of stuff to ask. He had a whole lot to say, but we still got the most out of before, during, and after prison in 30 minutes. We got right to the meat. That's what I like. That's what we should do.
Absolutely. We got one more question in the chat here. Amber's driving, and so she said that sound's not working. But she'd like to know, Mr. Bell, how did your family deal with you being away? You talk about these sort of love and these connections. What was it like sort of reconnecting? And was there any loss there? Was there any, I'm sure there was some, you know, some sort of strife kind of keeping those connections going while you were incarcerated.
Well, in prison, you start to become a loner. You know, not getting in contact with people is, you don't lose sleep, you know? And those people who love you, they're there for you. And then some people, as I said before, they don't really know what love truly is. So now when they see you, it's like, dang, I should have done this, or like, I never thought this day would come. I don't think a lot of people believe that I would have got out of prison. My last time I looked at my release date was 2047. You know what I'm saying? So now, like, I seen some people last night that was family. They cried. You know, I could have said, well, you know, this, that, and the third. Nah. You know, you gotta let the people let it out. because a lot of people don't know what's what happens inside. They don't know. We just see what we see on television and in the movies. Like, okay, they're locked up. You get 3 meals a day. You don't even know the half of how much family support and love from the people from outside means so much. Because another thing to answer the other young man's question, that's another thing that keeps a person's mind so fortified, because he has somebody to talk to. He has somebody to take him out of that realm of being inside. You know, so it's like, it's the best way I can give it to you.
It was beautiful. That was really well spoken, Aaron. That was really well spoken. Hey, let me just ask you some personal stuff. You said you played at Dunbar. Would you play basketball, football, or what?
Yeah, I played basketball.
Did you play with Keith and all those guys? Booth?
No. He's older than me. I graduated in 2000.
Okay. So, like, who are some of the guys you played with? Because, you know, I did sports at Channel 13 for a long time here. So I'm trying to figure, who was the superstar you played with?
Well, a lot of guys now, you have Magic, you have Dorsey. Dorsey plays overseas. A lot of guys played overseas. They played overseas. Yeah. Nobody in my class went to the NBA. Nobody went to my class went to the NBA from 2000. The last person who actually made it into the league was Carmelo.
Okay. I was watching him last night.
Yeah.
He got off last night. Man, we can't say thank you enough, Aaron. And I want us to stay in touch. I'm going to hold on to your number because everything we just
Please
heard.
Do. I appreciate this. Oh, man, I'd love to do more with you guys.
We're going to do more down the road. That's why we're going to stay in touch, because what we're doing is expanding our program with this perspectives of incarceration for way down the road. So I don't know how far it's going to go, but I got visions that this thing is really going to grow, and we just want you to stick with us. So I'll be staying in touch with you. I'll get back
you
with you.
You guys should do like a documentary, a side-by-side or something.
Exactly. Exactly. There are more things down the road, but with what we just did with you, let's say we talked to you for about 40 minutes. We're going to boil you down to about 5 minutes worth of stuff. But we're going to pick out your real good stuff, the stuff that I just wrote down that's got an asterisk next to it. And the students are going to decide what's the best stuff you just said, because you had a whole bunch of hard-hitting stuff. Right. So it's going to come out good, man. So thank you again,
Right.
Anybody want to say anything just to thank Mr. Aaron? Any of you fellows? I thought I heard somebody say something, but I think they already said their things. So look, we're in class at 12. I think our timing is perfect. I mean, you know, we usually right about now, once we got through talking with our guest, we would sit down and start breaking everything down, but we only got like about 3 minutes of class. So when we get together Tuesday, do we want to start off doing that, Luke? Just breaking down everything Mr. Bell just said?
Yeah, absolutely. And before we say thanks and goodbye one more time, just kind of, I guess, post-emptively, could we just get an ID? So could you just introduce yourself, Mr. Bell? Just, you know, your name and how old you are and how long, you know, just introduce yourself real quick so we can put it at the beginning of the interview.
Well, my name is Aaron Bell. I am 39 years of age from East Baltimore.
Thank you so much. That'll be perfect.
Sure, man.
I wish you nothing but the best of luck. And I think I'm speaking for everybody. You got
I wish all of y'all that, man.
You got a great personality, man.
It's let me a just good start.
Do you consider yourself, this is off the record, you consider yourself a walking miracle that you got all of that time cut?
I do. And I feel that I'm a vessel too for a lot of individuals, because me having the experience on both sides, I can relate to both sides. You know, the people who had a good upbringing and people who didn't. So it's like, you know, look at his lifestyle. Look what happened to him, and look what he's doing now. So I feel that way, what you said.